Welcome to Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. Movies and media are changing the way we think, live, relate, and dream. So each week, we talk to media pioneers and also showcase today's independent and visionary filmmakers whose movies evoke what I call the spirit of film, which is a metaphor for the movie's magical power to transform our lives. Hi, everyone. Well, today is going to be a different kind of a program. We usually talk about movies and media on the show, but I've been booked, I've been actually invited very graciously to become a speaker at an event in Sedona happening in January, and I want to tell you a little bit more about that. It's a conference called Finding the Gift and Shift, and it's happening in Sedona, Arizona on January 21st through 23rd, 2011, in about a month from now. And I just thought there's so many incredibly amazing and wonderful speakers at this conference that I would give you a little bit of a preview and allow you to get to know them a little bit. And so these next shows between now and mid-January are going to be all about finding out a little bit more about some of these presenters and their amazing background. And we have two of them with us today. In the first half hour, we have Mr. Dennis Andres. And in the second half hour, we have Sarah McLean, and she'll be coming on in just a bit. So Dennis is here with us today. And hi, Dennis. How are you?
Rand, I feel great. It's nice to be talking to you today.
Well, Dennis, you're the actual one of the MCs having to do with Gift and Shift. So why don't you give us a little bit of a preview of what you feel is going to be some of the excitement at the conference.
Well, I am excited about it. In fact, I believe this is now the fourth year for Gift and Shift to be going on, and it seems like it's been improving each year. I think it brings a great combination of three things. First of all, really interesting cutting-edge speakers, particularly keynotes like Greg Braden, who certainly has drawn a lot of attention, but many, many other speakers in addition to Greg Braden this year, which allow people the chance to find their niche, their area of personal growth that they're most interested in to pursue. The second thing is, it's a great environment. When you're doing growth work with other people around who are open-minded, like-minded, supportive, who are standing where you are on your trail of consciousness, as I call it, it seems to support the growth work that people do. I think for that reason, this conference, because it draws people together, is going to be more exciting this year because it's grown each year. And the third is Sedona itself, which I think is a fantastic place to find gifts and to find shifts, for sure.
Well, you certainly have a lot of background in that. Matter of fact, a lot of people call you Mr. Sedona, because of your experience in taking people around on both the inner trail and the outer trail, hiking around the Sedona area. And you've tracked a lot of time and distance in that area. And we're going to get into a little bit about the mystical and the mystery behind all the lore and legends and actual real events happening in Sedona up there. I've been up there, of course, many times myself, and it's a very exciting place. And I just want to add one more thing. It's going to be at the beautiful Poco Diablo Resort in Sedona, which we've been there before, and it's a wonderful resort. I just want to give them a little bit of a plug, too. So, Dennis,
exactly.
You traveled quite a distance, not only, of course, around Sedona, but you've been to many sacred places around the world, in Nepal, Peru, Tibet, and just about all continents across the world. What is it that you feel is unique and different about Sedona from all those other sacred sites?
You know, it's interesting, Randall, because as a background to my answer, let me say that, first of all, I had no idea that Sedona was a sacred site. I had visited most of those places around the world in my teens, my 20s, my 30s, and sort of showed up to Sedona later on. I was actually working in Siberia as a diplomat when I got accepted to graduate school in Arizona. I grew up in New York and New Jersey, and so when I called home from Siberia, believe it or not, my mother answered, and she offered to drive across country with me if I promised we would stop in Sedona. Well, selfish brat that I was, I had never heard of the place, so I turned her down. But upon reflection, I thought, well, hey, having a second driver might save me a day. and it is my mom. So I made a deal with her that one day she helped me save going cross country, I would spend it with her in whatever the name of that little town was that she wanted to see. And when we came out together on that day, my mother literally cried for the entire time that we were in Sedona. I was shocked. In fact, I was quite nervous about her. But when I asked her what she was feeling or how she was doing, she said, "Dennis, I've never been so happy before in my life." Now, I've had a friend who heard me tell this story the other day who actually knows my mother, and she said, "You know, Dennis, you're not telling the story truthfully." I said, "What do you mean? That's exactly what she said." She said, "No, your mother's from Brooklyn. What she said was, I've never been so happy before in my life. It's gorgeous here." Sounds a little less spiritual with the accent, but I think people get the point. So, you know, there's lots of things you can believe or disbelieve in the world, but when you're confronted with your very own mother having an experience right there in front of you, well, you stop spending time wondering if something is going on, and you start thinking, what is going on, and how can I understand it? I didn't actually move to Sedona immediately. I did go to graduate school, and I was abroad for several more years, and it was only a few years later that I moved back to the USA when I started guiding to sacred sites around the world, and at that time made Sedona my home. So in fact, Randall, the first part of the answer is to see that Sedona is very much alike those other sacred sites, which was a relatively new concept back then. There was much more emphasis of either people being skeptical, thinking that there wasn't anything going on in Sedona, or that Sedona was a place unlike any other that had no relationship. In fact, that's what many people used to say back then. They would tell me this was the only such place on the planet. And I would often say, "Well, what other places on the planet have you been?" And sure enough, they had rarely been beyond the Arizona state borders. So the first part of the answer is that it is like the other sacred sites in the world. How it's different, to get to the heart of your question, I think is it's different in a few wonderful ways, and probably the word that best describes that is it's accessible. You know, I think of Sedona as America's sacred site. It's a place you can get to. There's good food. There's nice places to stay. The nature is never more than a couple minutes away, and that's even a couple minutes by foot. And that's very unusual. Around the world, sacred sites tend to be in places that are remote. They're at the bottom of a valley or the top of a mountain. They are heavily guarded, or they're in some distant fortress. They're always a challenge to get to, and making pilgrimage used to be a lot of work. For people today, Sedona is a place that's very accessible.
Now, you've written a couple of books. One is called What is a Vortex? And I wanted to kind of explore that idea, because a lot of people have heard about these vortexes in Sedona, and everyone's got their own preconceived notions about exactly what this is.
Sure.
So what I'd like you to do is kind of, first of all, explain from your perspective what you think a vortex is from, I would say, a spiritual metaphysical perspective, and then, if you can, more of a scientific perspective. And then I want to ask you a little bit about some of the actual experiences of that people have had, and where these vortexes are in the town there.
Those are all good questions, and I let me just first of all agree with you that it's a confusing subject, and confusion in Sedona is welcome. When I speak publicly, or when my guides and I take people out on the land, we don't assume that everybody knows it all. In fact, it's the people that think they know it all that we're the most skeptical of ourselves.
And when you say guides, you mean real people guides, not spiritual guides.
Yes, that's right.
You have to make that distinction these days.
But that's exactly right. You're going to get a man with a hat.
A real person. Yeah, because I just want to mention. Yeah, I just want to mention your site, which is SedonaPrivateGuides.com, that people can go to, and they can find out more about the services that you offer in terms of taking people around town there. But go ahead and answer the question.
Well, it's from my work as part of Sedona Private Guides, now leading more than 5,000 people out on the land over the last 15 years, and having personally walked more than 5,000 miles on the trails of Sedona, that I think I've got some answers. Not all of the answers, for sure. But here are just a few that can usually help people. And the first is that we've learned over time that there is something going on here. Now, that might seem a very simple, a very obvious thing to say, but it's taken us a long time to be able to say so conclusively. Frankly, because when I first got here 15 years ago, everyone had an idea, and nobody bothered to ask anybody else's opinion. In other words, you could go to a vortex expert of the time, and they would say, well, you're supposed to stand in this spot and feel it this way. And inevitably, when I would ask them why, they would say, well, because that's how I feel it. So what I made very early on as a principle of my adventures was to stop telling people what they were supposed to feel and just listen, just to be present with them for their experience, to facilitate something happening if it was going to happen. Now, the second thing, and by the way, now, having taken out so many people and interviewed probably another 5,000 to 10,000 more, it would be totally unscientific to ignore what we see happen to thousands of people. But that brings me to the second point about what's going on, which is it's not having the same effect on everyone here. And there's been a lot of confusion about that over time. You see, the tendency in Sedona has been to think about someone's experience in nature and to judge them for it. In other words, to assume that if you felt a tingling in your hands or you started to get emotional, as my mother did way back when, that somehow made you a more spiritual person. And that, frankly, over the years has caused a lot of bad feelings, because anyone who didn't feel it that way was suggested, well, hey, you need to go back to the ashram, or time for you to meditate some more. Maybe you need to go live in a cave for a few years. Come back and get more conscious. Now we know from watching so many thousands of people that it is not exactly a spiritual litmus test. It would be better to describe the energy here as a sign that can tell us whether you are more sensitive to subtle energy. And that is something that is in common about sacred sites around the world. You know, Randall, they look different. They've got different colors, different shapes. There's definitely different geology going on in these places, different locations and cultures built up around them. But one of the things that is in common is that native peoples around the world have a word for this kind of energy. In Asia, where your acupuncturist would call it chi, if you took one of our yoga hikes, we would call it prana. In Peru, the Incas, who are the descendants of the Quechua, they have their own word as well. It's only in English that we haven't had a good term, and that's why I recommend that phrase, subtle energy. That seems to be what people are feeling around here. So those are a couple of the basics of what we're finding here. One, A, there is something going on, but B, what's going on doesn't necessarily tell us, or doesn't give us the right to choose one person as more spiritual than another, because people tend to feel things differently.
So there's different parts of town there where you take people around these hikes, and are there some places that are stronger than others? Because my experience when I go there, and there are also masculine, feminine kinds of things that people talk about, as far as Bell Rock being more masculine, Cathedral Rock being more feminine, that kind of a thing. So I'll get into that. But there's one distinction that I want to make about Sedona that I, from my observation, is that there's a lot of sacred sites around the world that have energy that's there, present on the earth, that's been there since the beginning, thousands of years. And then ancient cultures have built monuments on top of them or in the area, which is, of course, focusing and accelerating and fine-tuning the energy. But Sedona is different because everything is natural. There are no artificial structures, and we have this effect going on.
I think that's a great point. And, you know, on this, I'm going to defer to a true expert in sacred sites, another Sedonan actually named Martin Gray, I've been to about 52 countries in the world. Martin has been to more than 115. And he would suggest to you that these sacred sites tend to fall into two groups. One are these places of tremendous natural beauty, where you just show up at the place and people will feel it. They tend to be quite awesome and spectacular in terms of landscape and natural beauty. But there are other kinds of sacred sites where maybe something special happened to somebody who was holy. Somebody died, somebody lived, somebody was resurrected, somebody became enlightened by a certain tree. Some miracle was performed. And these are places where then people said, you know, whether or not it was a beautiful place, people would say, we want to make this a special place. We want to commemorate. And what's special there is that people bring their intention when they make pilgrimages to a place like that. Now, what I've found in Sedona over time, I think obviously the first kind of site, that it's a place of natural beauty where often you find a phenomena happening to people, I think that's a given. I think that's guaranteed. I don't think there'd be any argument about that. But what's great about things like Gift and Shift, what's great about when people listening to your program come to Sedona with their intention is, in a sense, they're creating Sedona as the second kind of sacred site as well. When you put that natural energy together with the power of intention, that's when you're creating the conditions for magic. That's when you're setting up the likelihood that if somebody wants to make a shift in their life, whether it be career, relationship, wealth and finance, etc., then those people, what we find over time, those people are much more likely to have it happen.
Well, terrific.
Now, you asked me about places. Are there spots that are better, that have more energy? Certainly, there are more famous places. But I think that part of my work has been to help people understand that there isn't necessarily an X that you have to go stand on. Now, 20 years ago, that wasn't a problem to convey that idea. All of the famous places that people have heard of, that they'll find out about when they come for Gift and Shift, all of those famous places are wonderful to see. There's not really any ugly spots in Sedona that you have to avoid.
That's true.
But because I am also a lover of nature and the forest, what I've also found is that to protect the nature, in other words, to really connect with nature rather than conquer it, it makes a lot of sense to go beyond those places. One of the great things about taking so many people out over the years is I've been able to watch who's feeling what and where. And the first thing I hinted out earlier, people who are more sensitive to subtle energy, they may feel it wherever they are in nature. And so for that, but even for people who are insensitive in that way, in other words, for everybody, for people like me, I don't necessarily get a tingle. I feel this urge to climb. I just want to get to the top of every formation I can see. And we're finding a lot of evidence, by the way, Randall, that men and women typically have different reactions to being in Sedona. And so we appreciate the differences among genders as well. The point being, don't get stuck on looking for X's. There are 1.6 million acres of national forest, and we are in danger of loving it to death if we keep going to the same places over and over again. There are so many more beautiful places that I've been able to walk with people that maybe don't have a name. They don't show up on a map you'll get from a timeshare salesman. They're not going to show up even in my own books. They are found by going deeper into nature. And that way, people get to explore the sites they like best, just as you have, and they can have their own experience. Maybe the one thing that I do take credit for as an expert is to get people to stop asking experts and to start seeing themselves as experts in exploring their own personal energy.
Thank you for saying that. That's a really good point. We have to start trusting our own abilities more and more, and that's, I think, part of the message that you get being in Sedona. I would say that. On the jumping into the scientific side, one of the things that, of course, is natural in the rock there is a tremendous amount of iron. And, of course, where you have iron, you have magnetism. So I would say that there's the intensity of magnetic fields in Sedona is very strong. So that's possibly, I would say, from looking at that, again, that scientific perspective, one of the reasons that I think we have these effects. There's probably a lot of other things which we don't have time to go into as far as explanations, but I'll just give you an example of experience that I had on Bell Rock. Is I climbed pretty far to the top, just below the very top of the rock. I got to there's a little spot up there where you can get up to. It's not that easy to get up there, and it's a little dangerous. So I don't recommend this to everybody to go climbing up there, but unless you have a little bit of experience in rock climbing, because it's not just something you do on foot. You have to get up there with handholds. But there's a spot up there where I got up pretty high. It was a nice day, middle of the afternoon. And I laid back on, there's this flat rock that's there. And it felt as if there was energy that was pushing down on me, going from the sky into the earth, and there was energy coming up from the earth, going through my body, and pushing up towards the sky, as if you were being pulled and as if I was being pulled in two different directions. And it was a little uncomfortable, let me tell you. It felt as if your insides are being pulled in two different directions, and it was pretty strong. And I only was able to stay there for maybe about 30 seconds or a minute. But after I realized that as you get closer to the top, or there are certain areas of these vortexes or these places in Sedona, that the energy becomes more focused. And like you said, your natural inclination to climb and get up closer to that. Maybe I was thinking that that kind of brought that memory and telling that story here today. So the other thing that I would say is about the vortex experience is that it seems to be a process of acceleration. That my first time there was in February of 1988, and I felt that what I was able to emotionally process in 3 months, I did in 3 days. So that's, I think, the reason where it brings out a lot of energy sometimes that we suppress either mentally or actually physically or spiritually, that those doors are open for us, and then the energy just starts to spill out, and we have to kind of witness it in whatever form it's coming out. Is that it's kind of a something similar to what you've seen with people?
Randall, I wish all the customers were like you. I got to say, first of all, what's great is that you went out, you had a personal experience, and you were comfortable with it. You didn't talk yourself out of it. It's ironic. Years ago, I used to take people out, and they kept asking me what they were supposed to feel, because it's natural. This is new. It's unusual, and we're looking for some direction. So kudos to you. Bravo for getting out onto the land. By the way, the overwhelming majority of visitors to Sedona don't even get out of the car. We have 3 million visitors. Most stay for just a couple of hours, and let me tell you, they're missing it. When people come for Gift and Shift, when they come and stay at least overnight in Sedona, the opportunity to get deeper into the land is awesome. And you literally feel like you've been to a different place than the one people have driven through. In terms of how the energy works, I think you've expressed it beautifully. I think of there being sort of two phases. And phase one is the phenomena, right? Is somebody having a tingling? Are they feeling it as you did? Pushing down on them? Are they feeling emotions come up? Some physical phenomena, for example. And watching now for so many years, I am thoroughly convinced of it. We know that it doesn't happen to everybody, but that doesn't mean there's nothing going on. But frankly, Randall, what I'm excited about the conference for is that now that we've figured that out, we're ready to move on. We know there's something going on here. The more interesting question is, what can we do with it? How can we work with it? How can it support us in our growth? And I would say that the energy that's here, just as you suggested, has that amplifying effect. It has sort of a trampoline effect. If somebody wanted to think about a problem in their life they wanted to shift, it's like doing 10 years of therapy in a weekend. But even better, what I've found over the years is an increasing number of people who, because they've done personal growth, are showing up not because their life is full of problems, but because their life is full of successes. And for them, it's almost like walking through the forest and finding the trail has come to an end. And now in front of a virgin forest, the question is, which way are you going to go? Sedona, for those people whose lives are being lived well, is also a great opportunity where you can plant the seeds for new dreams. In other words, once you're living some of the dreams you've put out there years ago doing your growth, now that trampoline effect can be applied to help you create a new future. And let me tell you, I've, especially over the last couple of years, Randall, had a nice client group of clients who are, honestly, their biggest problem is they'll say things like, Dennis, we don't know whether to summer in Aspen or the Alps. And let me tell you, that's the kind of problems I'd like to have. Sedona is a place where people like that often come as well, because they want to take their life not from bad to good, but from good to even better.
Right. So are you going to be available to give some tours before the Gift and Shift conference and after? Because I think that's a great thing for people to plan if they're going to come out to the conference, is to do some time in meditation and take a hike before or after, or maybe both. So are you going to be offering that?
That's exactly how we became associated with Gift and Shift. Over in the early years, having so many people come out with us before, during, or after the event, they had such great experiences with us that they reported back to the producers of the conference and said, hey, you've got to work with these guys. So, yes, my team will be ready. We're really looking forward to it.
Okay.
People can contact us, obviously, at SedonaPrivateGuides.com on the website. They'll find lots of testimonials, lots of opportunities to get outside. All of our outings, by the way, Randall, are private, so it does give people the chance to have a personal experience while they're out on the land.
Right, and sometimes that gets a little emotional, so having that private experience and being with someone who's well-experienced as a trail guide is definitely something to take advantage of if you're coming to town here. So, Dennis, I really appreciate your time today, and thanks so much. I think the conversation was worthwhile for people to listen to, and look forward to seeing you at the conference, and everyone can be able to meet you. And, of course, SedonaPrivateGuides.com. Check Dennis's site out for his team and all the services, and maybe you want to pick up some books, too. So, Dennis, thanks very much today for your time.
Randall, I look forward to seeing you in Red Rock Country.
I'll be there. All right. Well, we're going to transition here in just a minute. We have another guest who's going to be joining us, and that guest is Sarah McLean. And you can visit her site at SedonaMeditation.com. All these websites seem to have Sedona in them. Well, that's the location of the Gift and Shift Conference. And we hope that you'll also check out Stellar Productions Live. That's STELLAR, productionslive.com. Or you can go to my site at spiritoffilm.net and just click on the poster. That'll take you right over to the site. So we're going to spend a little time with Sarah McLean right now. Sarah, are you there?
I am. I'm right here.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I really had a very enjoyable conversation with Dennis. And I want to kind of pick up the story for you with joining the Gift and Shift Conference. And tell us a little bit about what you're going to be offering there. I think you're going to be doing some morning meditations, and you'll be giving a talk as well.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's so many people who, in the past, and I've been to thousands of these events based on working with Deepak Chopra and Gary Zukav and Byron Katie and Debbie Ford. I've been to thousands and thousands of events, and I find that, you know, people are really looking for an experience, you know, not just to listen to somebody who interests them, but to really have some tools to transform their lives with these events. And Gift and Shift is one of those. And so hopefully what my plan is I will open up with for Greg Braden on the 21st, and it's a Friday, and hopefully we'll get people really centered on who they are and what they want. You know, obviously people come to retreats or events because they have a certain idea of what they hope to leave with. And so I really hope to lead people into a deep meditation to connect with who they really are and why they're really decided to take that weekend for themselves. So, yes, there'll be instruction and meditation. There'll be guided meditations every morning. Nobody needs to have any experience in meditation in order to have a successful experience or a pleasant one. And we did this last year and the year before, and I believe that, you know, people found value in actually doing some of these practices that can help to transform us on a daily basis, really.
Well, I think a lot of people are coming to the conference, and my experience being there before and being a speaker before is that there's many people who are looking to make a change in their lives in some form. And of course, the Gift and Shift Conference is a great opportunity to do that, because whatever perspective that you're most interested in, you'll get that. Plus, you'll get a whole smorgasbord of lots of other things. So I plan to be there for your morning meditations. Definitely, I want to stay focused on this because there's a lot of information coming, you know, through the days there. But I want to go back a little bit into the history of meditation, especially in the West, because during the 60s, that really was a huge time for this whole idea of these transformational techniques that have been sort of in other parts of the world. But in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and even the resurgence in the late 80s, early 90s, I saw there was a lot of new techniques and new modalities and things like that. So talk a little bit about Your experience in terms of meditation, are there different styles, are there different techniques, and what are some of the things that you teach?
Okay, well, I can tell you that I believe thousands or maybe millions of years ago, the first meditation was really probably sitting around a campfire staring at the flames of the fire and really asking those essential questions, you know, who am I, why am I here, and what is this life, or what is the purpose of my life? So that is actually a practice that is practiced today in a form called Trotika, and instead of looking at a fire, they're looking at a candle flame. So that is something that's been around forever, as well as the practice of paying attention to the sensation of the breath and to train the awareness to come back to that experience of the present moment, which the breath is always taking us to. So those are the two most ancient techniques I can imagine that happened. Now, in today's world, and yes, you're right, with the 60s, you know, people started to equate meditation with gurus and India and the Beatles and with what was coined transcendental meditation. And funny, the actual theme of the conference this time is called transcendence. And what does that word mean? Transcendence means the ability to go beyond. The ability to go beyond the world of form and phenomenon, the world of the senses, the world of things and bank accounts and you know, diagnoses and addresses and professions and positions and self-image. And that's really what happens in meditation. And that meditation that the Maharishi came and made popular in the 60s was a very simple meditation, and all meditations really require what he suggested people use, and it's true for all. All meditations require your own awareness to be focused on a particular thing. Now, the thing could be, as I said, something you see, like something in a fireplace or a candle flame or a picture of a saint or the stars at night or even something you see in your mind's eye. A lot of people do a lot of visualizations. Those could be more meditative practices rather than meditation, but it takes the awareness to be focused on something. The next way that people meditate is to be focused on the sensation of touch. Now, when I ask you to put your attention on your breath, you're putting your attention on the sensation of your breath. And it's not that you're touching something, but it's the subtle form, the subtle sense of touch. You're feeling your breath. And that's an ancient way to meditate. But it's also the sense of touch can be used in meditation in terms of possibly doing Tai Chi or yoga or even getting a massage or walking meditations, which in Zen Buddhism is called Kinhin. So you can use the sense of sound, you can use the sense of touch, you can use the sense of sight, and the sense of sound is the one that the Maharishi was talking about. He used what was called a mantra. Mantras are, they're used silently, some are used out loud, but the ones he used were used silently. They're usually words that have no particular meaning, and mantra is broken up into two root words, man or man or mind. And tra is the root word for instrument. So a mantra is the root word, or mantra is the word that means instrument for the mind. And he made silent meditation very popular because almost anyone can do that. And, you know, there was this saying, they said, if you can think a thought, you can meditate. Most of our thoughts, and most people say, well, I can't meditate because I can't stop thinking, and it's actually the opposite is true. Most of our thoughts are linguistically structured. We hear them in words. We hear 60,000 of them every day, where the meaning of one word, let's say I use the word Sedona, can start to stimulate other words, other thoughts. So and maybe your listeners might say, okay, the word Sedona, they could think, well, I've never been there. I want to go there. I want to go to Gift and Shift. I want to see those red rocks. I want to see if vortex energy is real. I don't want to go there. Maybe they have the thought, I don't want to go there. Or maybe they have the thought, I've been there, and I want to go again. Or I've been there, and I don't need to see it again. See, we have a constant dialogue with ourselves. And it's done using usually linguistically structured thoughts. So mantras are a way, and this is why it was so famous in the 60s, mantras are a way to silence the mind, not by trying to silence it, but by interrupting the thoughts with a word that has no particular meaning. And this starts to create some settling down of the nervous system. Now, I first learned meditation in college, and it was a visualization practice, visualizing energy centers. I personally was not a big fan. It got me very frustrated, and I actually didn't do it after a little while. First of all, they told me I had to do it for an hour. Now, I was always interested and fascinated by meditation, but the second meditation I did, I went to a Zen center where they had me sit on a cushion with my legs crossed for a half an hour paying attention to my breath. And that was also very challenging because I didn't know what the obstacles were going to be. I didn't know what I was supposed to be feeling. I didn't know if I should try really hard. I didn't know if I was doing it right. So that was frustrating as well. And eventually I ended up learning that TM technique from the 60s and eventually ended up moving into a different variations on that theme using silent mantra techniques through Deepak Chopra's work, the primordial sound meditation technique. And then I ended up going to India and learning a whole bunch of other techniques there. And then I went and lived in a Zen Buddhist monastery where I actually said, I'm going to get good at this. So I've had a lot of practice, I've tried a lot of different kinds, and, you know, meditation these days is taken seriously, I think, a little more because the research is catching up with it. I mean, there have always been people who said, oh, it makes you feel better, it helps you get clear, it helps your blood pressure, it helps to change your life and transform your world. However, there never really has been that much proof. And so with the research projects, whether it's at University of Kentucky or University of Wisconsin or University of California, they've got all this research going on proving meditation does work for a lot of problems that we have in this fast-paced society.
Well, I remember there was in the Bleep movie, there was that great sequence where they talked about the result of meditation that actually affected a geographic area. That was some fascinating stuff. But I wanted to go into some of the other aspects of meditation, and I want to bring up this idea of using energy. You mentioned about visualizing the chakras in the body.
Mm-hmm.
I did a form of Kundalini yoga years ago with a master instructor from India, and it was called Simplified Kundalini Yoga, and it was the technique was actually to focus on the point in the forehead, the third eye, and to feel the energy that's coming out of that chakra, and then eventually that to allow that energy to move through the body. And then also there was one where you would balance working with the root chakra as well.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about this kind of meditation when you're using to focus energy and you're feeling energy in the body rather than just the breath.
Okay. Well, basically, meditation is the progressive settling down of the nervous system. And what that does, it does a few things. The first thing it does is it helps us to train our awareness to be in this moment, this one right here. As one of my students says, you know, this is where the action is. So when we're in this moment, or this one, and paying close attention, we really start to become more aware of what we're feeling, what we're thinking, and what we're doing. So meditation starts to train us to be much more sensitive and much more present to our lives and what's going on inside our body and outside of our body. So you talk about energy and you talk about Kundalini yoga. Kundalini yoga is a specific kind of yoga that incorporates movement and chanting and breathing and energy, and using energy in a series of different what they would call meditations, including postures. And it's very apropos for this particular time in our world because people are starting to become more sensitive to vibes, so to speak. You know, they're starting to say, God, that doesn't feel good anymore, or, you know, I don't really like to hang out with that person, or I really like going to this location. So everybody's got the ability to feel certain vibrations and certain feelings. You talk about energy centers, and basically yoga comes from the root word yoke, and it really means to yoke your awareness with your subtle body, with your spirit, with your emotional body, and with your physical body, and including the environment. So yoga is the practice of being really unified with all of these. Instead of just knowing how your body looks, like people can be really body fixated or emotionally fixated or even spiritually fixated, but energetically, the subtle body is also a very important part of our growth. And you talk about these energy centers, which are called chakras, which means wheels, and they're really the junction points where our consciousness or our awareness sort of manifests or connects to our physical bodies. Now, one of the things that can happen for people, and this is what happened for me when I started with these energy centers, first of all, I didn't believe in them, so the next thing was I didn't really know what I was supposed to be feeling, and I hadn't already trained my awareness to be really focused. So I feel like people can run into that situation. But these energy centers, and there's seven of them, and interestingly enough, they're really connected with the endocrine system. And, you know, I've worked for 8 years with a man named Deepak Chopra, which most people know, but they didn't know then. And he is an endocrinologist. And it was interesting that he started to say, hey, consciousness is the primary approach to healing. And it's so subtle that you can't really touch it or see it or smell it, but it has great power. And the same is true for these energy centers or even the endocrine system, which is hormonal. And as every woman can tell you, hormones are very subtle, hard to pin down, and hard to control. And it's interesting that the chakras are also very subtle, very powerful, though, because the more subtle we go in creation, the more power we have access to. So when you're talking about energy, you're talking about something very powerful, and I want to just use this just to keep your listeners informed. You know, basically, we know gravity is real because we're not floating around the room. We know electricity is real because we can turn on a light, we can capture it through instruments. We know magnetism is real. We know all of these subtle things are real, and for those people who believe in God, they'd say, well, I know God is real because I can experience the effects of God. Well, this is how we're dealing with some subtleties here, because if I say to you, Randall, you know, go ahead and show me where gravity is, you wouldn't be able to point to it. If I said, show me consciousness, you wouldn't be able to point to it. If I said, show me electricity, you couldn't show me. But you can show me what the effects are. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about chakras, is we're talking about something so subtle, but yet fundamental and powerful. Now, I think for your listeners, they can focus on these chakras. I mean, there's colors you can focus on. There are qualities of these chakras you can focus on. And, you know, I think getting very quiet and paying attention, let's just say, to the base of your spine, where that force or that energy, which is called spiritual energy or kundalini, resides, that's at the base of the spine. And it moves up from there into a place kind of just below the belly button. And chakras aren't either in front or in back of you. They're right in the middle of your body. So there's this place there that's sort of the sexual energy chakra. That's the second chakra, and it's about creativity. The first chakra is about stability. Then you've got the next chakra, which is in your will center. It's sort of right under your breastbone. Right there, and that's a yellow chakra. You can imagine the colors if you want to. The base chakra is red. The sexual chakra or creativity chakra is orange. This will chakra or solar plexus chakra is yellow. Then you've got what's called the heart chakra, which is really the thymus chakra. And that is a green. And that's, of course, in charge of purity and nourishment and love and balance and compassion and connectivity. And then we move up to the throat chakra, which is this blue, And that's really connected to the sexual chakra too, which once the creativity is sort of enlivened, the throat chakra is where we use to express our creativity or our truth or our authenticity. Then we move up to our third eye, which is the one you mentioned, which is considered the spiritual chakra. And the color of that can be considered a purple color. And, you know, there are a variety of ways people say it. But that's the connection point where you are connected to the divine. Or at least that's the awareness of the connection. And then there's the crown chakra, which is on the top of the head, which can people say is either light pink or white or light purple. Or some people say it's ultraviolet. And that one is the direct connect, where we're, you know, some people say it's at the point where you're, if you look at your hair and it's all curled around in the back, you see it in little babies where their hair comes to a spiral.
Right, some the swirled hair on their head, yeah.
Right. So, you know, just to be aware of it is interesting. I think what some of the things that can happen for people is they think if they know it or if they pretend they know it, and this is what happened to me, it can get us into trouble if we try really hard. But, you know, I also had cancer in my throat chakra, so I had to learn all about these chakras because I was not, and if you look where the throat chakra is, it's between the head and the heart. And the throat chakra is where we express who we really are. It's kind of the meeting of the mind and the heart and being authentic and being creative and saying what we mean and meaning what we say. And I had to learn all about that when I ended up with that, with cancer there. So for me, they're very real, but they're also difficult to begin. I find, and you might have had a different experience, I find it's difficult to start there. That was my experience. What do you think? Is that where you started with meditation, is on the chakras?
No, I actually started with, I would say something which is in the form of just calming the mind, where it's just breathing and relaxing kind of
mm-hmm.
a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of started for me. But one of the things that I noticed about starting to work, and this is, you talked about the endocrine system, which according to both Deepak Chopra and Edgar Cayce, that is the connection of the subtle body into the physical body, if I'm
exactly.
not mistaken.
Exactly.
And everything that goes along with that. The other aspect of this that I've come to understand is that when we meditate, we're actually connecting into from our own personal energy system into the quantum field. So if we can access the quantum field, we have to get quiet and sort of strengthen or activate the subtle body to be able to have the, one, experiences that we'd like, two, to be able to fine-tune our mind and reach those higher states of awareness, whether it's spiritual awareness that you want or just what I call the active awareness, which is
right.
when you're doing stuff, you know, like writing or driving a car or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, you feed that aspect of your body when you work with the trifold aspects of yourself, mind, body, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That means you keep everything at optimum levels of activation. And that's why I feel that meditation is so important, because when I feel I don't meditate, I don't have the energy level that I normally do or that I would like. And that I feel I get tired more easily. And part
right.
of that is because the mind, the ego mind, or just, you know, the waking consciousness is trying to, you know, get back and sort of take what I call sort of take control of your consciousness, where you tend to forget about really where you are and you stop being present.
Right.
But if you meditate more, you put more in that bank account of that. And so you don't have these mood swings and emotional swings and things like that. So there's, and of course, stress reduction.
Right.
So I think those are the kind of things that I've discovered in my observation of people and talking with people that they've got out of meditation. That's I feel why it's so important personally, and especially at an event like Gift and Shift, where you're using your mind a lot to think about
exactly.
and listening to the speakers. So I think it's anyone who's going to attend the conference, to make sure that get up early and do the meditations with Sarah, because you're going to have a much better experience with the conference overall, because you'll be able to take in more information and you'll feel better and you'll have more energy. So I recommend that highly. And matter
so
of fact,
it's very integrative.
Yeah.
You know, it's that yoga again. It's being able to yoke your consciousness mm-hmm. with your subtle body, with your emotional body, with your spirit, and with your physical, so you have that total integration. And you brought up a good point, you know, we tend to not be soul-centered. We tend to be externally focused. And that can happen a lot, even in spiritual conferences, where we're listening to someone telling us what's going on and what their experience is, and then how do we then integrate that into our lives. And so what I did when I first went to work with Deepak Chopra, basically he started having everybody who came to their health to the health center, and they would come for a week, the first thing he would have them do was learn to meditate. And I was in charge of telling them to learn to meditate and telling them now why it was important. And the primary reason, well, he said, was consciousness is a primary. Everything comes from consciousness. And you said it right. It's the way we reconnect with who we really are. And when we reconnect with that, we actually start to purify our nervous system. We start to get rid of, and you call it stress reduction, we start getting rid of the stress, whether it's toxic emotions or toxic foods or just being in a toxic environment or toxic relationships. That just, you know, we accumulate that, and we get rid of that through the meditation.
And it could be physical, too, some physical things.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely physical. And what happens is when we start to eliminate that from our systems, we are able to maintain higher states or more expanded states of awareness. And that's exactly right, whether it's awareness of who we are or what we want, but just or awareness of, as we walk through life, of being in the present moment. So it's actually a tool for a great life, and it's really important. And I used to tell people with meditation it will help to eliminate that, I like to say, filter or veil which inhibits that mind-body communication and connection. Because when we have stress, it starts to make it prevents the body from its optimal healing, optimal functioning process. So that's why when people first came to the Chopra Center, that's the first thing that they would be doing is to meditate, to get rid of the toxicity, to access and create this yoga with their own spirit. There's so many qualities of your own spirit that, you know, get enlivened through meditation. One is purity, one is balance, one is infinite organizing power, one is all possibilities, one is creativity and bliss and silence and the sense of timelessness and the sense of being totally expanded. And so there are so many qualities that when we practice meditation on a daily basis, it's almost like we steep our own awareness into this vat of all this yumminess, and we come out of meditation and we have a little more of that with us. You know, have a little more creativity, have a little more silence, have a little more bliss, have a little more knowledge, have a little more understanding or compassion, and that makes it a lot easier to walk through the world. You know, I look at meditation a lot like brushing my teeth. I'm not looking for a certain experience in meditation. What I'm looking for is to have a great life. So I do it every day. I'm not trying to think, should I do it? Maybe I shouldn't. I brush my teeth every day. I do it every day. I'm not concerned about the experience of it, but I walk through the world and it feels better because I've taken care of the moment, which meditation does, and it also takes care of long-term buildup, which meditation also does. So we can be clear, rested, creative, present for our lives. And you said we become less reactive, and that is true. There's more spaciousness between the thoughts. There's more spaciousness between the stimulus and response. And there's more creativity because we've expanded, and literally they've studied this at University of Wisconsin, we have more access to different neuronal pathways over time. We create more plasticity in the brain, which means we have many more choices we can make. Instead of having the rote 60,000 thoughts a day that we're having again tomorrow and the next day and the next day, we start to get more creative. And it's nothing we have to try to do. It's simply a side effect of meditation.
Well, you've got a CD that you have on your website, SedonaMeditation.com, which is a great introduction for people who are just really wanting to make their meditations better or have a little bit of guidance. And you'll also be offering those classes, morning classes at the Gift and Shift Conference. And you have some other events happening after that that people can sign up for, too. The one that interests me is that writing meditation one.
Oh, yes.
That looks really good.
You know, it's only for women, but I'm thinking about opening it up to men at some point.
Well, I'd like to come to that. Don't just have it for women. I mean, come on now. There's lots of men who are writers out there.
That's true. And, you know, it's really, you know, it looks like it's all about writing and meditating. But meditation, and I'll just leave you with this, meditation, people say meditation is like listening to God. Prayer is talking to God, and meditation is listening to God. And I really find that meditation is more like a purifying the nervous system so that as we walk through the world, we can hear the divine and hear our intuition and hear our inner wisdom. And so what this writing retreat does is it really gives us a way to go from meditation to just focusing on one point and then writing from there and really deeply listening to ourselves. And there's a really wonderful practice of deep listening to the other when we, if someone feels like reading it, it's just about being so present and being so heard, and that is extremely nourishing for people.
Well, I've got to stop you right there, Sarah. Sarah McLean, SedonaMeditation.com. You can find out more. And, of course, Gift and Shift Conference happening in January. You can go to my site, spiritoffilm.net, click on the poster, and it'll take you right there, or go to Stellar Productions Live. I thank you to both of our guests today, Dennis Andres and Sarah McLean. Sarah, much appreciated your time today.
See you in Sedona.
Yes, we're all looking forward to it.
Great. I look forward to it, too. Thanks for having me today.
You're very welcome. So, everyone, that's a wrap for our show for this week. Join us again next week as we continue our series of presenters that are going to be at the Gift and Shift Conference, and that you can learn more, again, about going to the conference that's happening in about the third week of January. Check it out, Stellar Productions Live, or just go to my site, spiritoffilm.net, and click on that poster that's right there. A lot of great speakers. Thanks, everyone, for listening today, and much appreciated. And stay tuned to Seventh Wave Network and Voice America throughout your day, and stay connected. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.